Welcome. Thanks for holding out after lunch. So this is joint work with my colleagues Ashwini Rao, Norman Saadi, Alessandro Acquisti, and Rogu Kang from Carnegie Mellon. And let's start with an easy question. What do you think this website, what information does this website collect? Don't be shy, just, you know, what kind of information types does a website like this collect? Username, ID, IP address.
Social security number,
it's a bank, it might, right? So all these things, and you know, you have a good idea, and you haven't read the privacy policy for this website. So apparently people have an intuitive understanding or mental model of what certain kinds of websites do. However, there are also surprises hidden in these privacy policies. So for example, Bank of America also handles health information because they have an insurance business on the side. You know, that's kind of unexpected. And the problem with these unexpected or surprising practices is that they get easily overlooked. Even if you read the privacy policy, you know, there's maybe health information mentioned at one particular part, and it just gets lost in a sea of practices that are expected or just irrelevant to your current interaction context with the website. And we're not the first to think about this problem, but we've definitely been doing a lot of research on this. And the question is, you know, how can we learn more and better understand what practices are expected and unexpected, and how can we simplify notices to make users aware of these issues? So the research questions in this work are, first of all, better understanding what practices are expected and unexpected and what might be predictors for expectations in data practices. How can we measure these expectations, and how can we classify and identify mismatches in expectations? And lastly, how can we then use this information to emphasize potentially unexpected practices in privacy notices in a usable and meaningful way? All right, let's talk about types of expectations first. So if you look at the privacy literature, a lot of work focuses on privacy preferences, willingness to share and disclose information, desired level of privacy, maybe also the actual privacy of more in a feedback sense, what kind of privacy does a system afford? But the problem with looking at privacy preferences is that lots of work has shown by many people here in this room that preferences are malleable, they're uncertain, they're context dependent, so it can be really difficult to reason about them. Now, if we look at other domains, for example, consumer psychology, we see that there are actually more fine-grained distinctions between different types of expectations. So Miller, for example, many years ago, distinguished between the ideal. What should the performance of a system be? Then there's the expectation. What is the system likely doing? What is deserved? It's kind of the preference, right? What the user thinks the system should be or the system behavior should be. And then there's the minimum tolerable. And what we're focusing on in our work right here is this likelihood expectation. What do people think a website actually does at a certain point? So we distinguish between privacy expectations on the one hand, what does the website likely do or any kind of system likely does, and what are the privacy preferences, what it should be. And what we are interested in is comparing this to the actual practices of the website or the service of interest. And in this talk, I'm just going to be focusing on this upper link, the privacy expectations, mismatches between privacy expectations and actual practices. There's additional work to be done to kind of complete this triangle with more research. Okay, so our methodology is relatively straightforward, right? First, we need to elicit these privacy expectations, and we do this by presenting participants in our studies with actual websites, and then we do this in an online study, and then we ask participants to rate the likelihood that the website engages in certain data practices to get at this kind of objective expectation they might have. And I'm going to explain that in a bit more detail in a second. Second part is privacy policy analysis. So to get at what the websites do, we look at what privacy practices they disclose in their privacy policies. And then we can compare the likelihood expectations and the disclosed practices to see where there are mismatches between the user's expectations and the actual behavior of the websites. For this specific study, we looked at different data collection and data sharing practices, as well as data deletion, 17 practices in total. We looked at different information types. And for data collection, we looked at two scenarios. Does the user have an account? And how does it change, or does the user not have an account, and how do the expectations change between that? And the same for sharing, we look at is information shared for a core purpose, core purpose here means something that is necessary to fulfill your service. So for example, a shopping website forwarding your payment information to a payment provider to process the payment, or for other purposes. And other purposes could be marketing or just, you know, sharing with data brokers. And furthermore, we're interested in the effect of different website characteristics on these expectations. So in this particular study, we looked at three types of websites, finance websites and health websites, as two categories of websites that handle sensitive information, but different types of sensitive information, and dictionary websites, which we assumed are probably not that privacy sensitive. Right? And we also looked at websites with higher and lower rank popularity, as well as different ownership. Are they operated by a government entity or by a private entity? And on the other hand, there are user characteristics we're interested in. What's the user's experience with a certain website? We consider demographics and also their privacy experience and knowledge. And we conducted a between subjects study on Amazon Mechanical Turk, where we basically had 16 websites that fall into the website features I just showed you, and the details are in the paper. And then each participant was randomly assigned to one of these websites. So we had 15 participants per website, and they were asked to look at the website, and they couldn't advance in the survey, I think, for 2 minutes. And afterwards, they could advance, and they would basically get this description of the scenario to make sure they actually understand the context. So imagine that you're browsing the website. You do not have a user account on this website. That means you have not registered. What is the likelihood that the website would collect your information in this scenario? And then we ask this for the different information types. Okay, so that's the expectation elicitation part. The other part is privacy policy analysis. And there are different ways how we can extract information from privacy policies. So in an ideal world, coming back to the expectations, right, we would have machine-readable policy specifications that make it very easy to analyze this information. Unfortunately, P3P, as Laurie nicely summarized this morning, didn't take off as we all hoped. This doesn't work. And in recent years, there has been interesting research on developing semi-automated extraction methods to extract these data practices from privacy policies, for example, as part of the Usable Privacy Policy Project, which I'm also a part of. And in addition to that, we can also, of course, use manual annotation by experts. And in this particular study, we opted for this choice because we wanted to make sure that the extractions, the data practices we extract from the privacy policy are sufficiently reliable. And the extraction worked this way, that we had these we had a list of these 17 data practices, and then two annotators independently analyzed the 16 privacy policies and rated these 17 data practices as, yes, the website engages in this practice, no, it does not engage in it. From the policy, it's not clear whether it engages in the practice, so it means there's some ambiguity, or the policy is just plain silent. There's no indication or no statement that even relates to this. And I'm not going to go into the detail of this analysis. This is an overview of basically what kind of data practice, which websites engage in which data practices. But what you can take away from this is basically the things that are blue is means websites are engaging in this. So most of them collect information and also disclose that pretty well. And then when it comes to sharing, there are actually many websites that say, we do not share for other purposes, and they say that explicitly. They say we may share for core purposes, but not for other purposes. What is a bit concerning is all the purple, especially for sharing, because that means it's not clear from the policy whether they actually engage in these practices. Now, if we think about mismatched expectations, they actually, the first type that comes to mind is the website is doing something, for example, sharing data, but the user doesn't expect it, right? That's an unexpected data practice. And in this case, the user might give up data unknowingly, and if this comes out, the website might actually lose user trust or might lose users. But there's also the other case where the website is not engaging in a practice. For example, the website does not share data for other purposes, but users think they do. And in this case, users may refrain from using the website or not provide as much information. So they might lose some utility, but the company might also use customers. So the different type of mismatches have impact privacy differently, but there's definitely implications for both the user and the company from these mismatches. Okay, now looking at the results, I'm first going to talk about the expectations of the users, and then we look at the mismatches with actual data practices. So if you look at the website characteristics, we see that participants expect almost all websites to collect location and contact information, and also expect that this information is shared for core purposes. This just seems to be the reality on the web, and users just expect that. But we also see that the website type has a statistically significant effect on participants' expectations, especially for the collection and sharing of financial and health information. So this indicates that for different types of websites, there are actually different expectations to some extent, at least for some data types, right? And popularity and ownership had no effect on this. So this is kind of nice if we want to contextualize privacy notices by focusing on unexpected practices. It means if we can classify the websites or why users are going to a website, then this might already be sufficient to tailor notices accordingly. If you look at the impact of user characteristics, we found that actually a range of user characteristics were predictive of users' expectations of certain practices. And I'm not going to discuss all of this in detail because it's in the paper, but basically what you can take away is that the user's prior experience with the website has an effect on their expectations. So when they recently used the website, they, for example, don't think that the website collects location information, which is kind of interesting, right? But there's also these aspects or they also don't think that it might share contact information for core purposes. But then trust in website goes the other way, right? So when they have lots of trust in the website, they actually think, okay, they don't share my information, and so forth. Privacy, on the other hand, as we might expect, people who are more privacy concerned or have more privacy knowledge generally expect that websites share more information and collect more information. Interesting exception is that people who rank higher on our privacy knowledge scale actually do not believe that websites collect health information unless you have an account on the website. And, you know, from a technical sense, that's probably right. Then for the deletion practices, what's interesting is that age actually has an impact. So people who are older are less likely to expect a website to allow them to delete information. They just basically resign with the fact that once the data is out there, they probably can't delete it anymore. Now, if we look at the mismatches with the expectations, what we see is that most explicit mismatches, and explicit here means the policies actually has a very explicit statement, so it's a no or yes statement. Most explicit mismatches occur for contact and financial information. And if you look at this, and you see this purple bar, or turquoise bar. And if you look at this in more detail, we see actually both types of mismatches. So if you look at the collection of contact information, we see that websites typically collect contact information, that some websites collect contact information without an account, but participants don't expect that. And that's typically the case, I guess, when you can enter into a sweepstakes or things like that. And there are also, but then for sharing of contact information, it's the other way around. So participants expect that contact information is shared with third parties anyway for any kind of reason. Well, that's not really the case. So a website, most websites do not share contact information beyond core purposes, at least not without consent. So while we see these, while we see that explicit mismatches are really dominant for contact and financial information, that doesn't mean that we don't have similar issues for health and location information. But the problem is that the policies, at least the policies we analyzed, but I've looked at many policies, and it's the case for others as well, is that they're just less clear on health and location information. So it's very hard to draw any conclusions if they're mismatches because we know the expectations, but we don't know what the websites are really doing because they're either, they're silent or they're just unclear on this. Now, for data deletion, what we find quite concerning is that participants expect websites to permit deletion, and at least half of our participants expected websites to allow partial deletion. 30% expected websites to allow full deletion of all of their data, but very few websites actually make any statements regarding this in their policies, and this is quite concerning. So in summary, what we see is that there are actually not that many explicit mismatches, but policies are often unclear or silent on certain practices. And then information collection without account, for users who don't have an account, is often unexpected, especially for contact and financial information when that occurs. But then there's also these other kinds of mismatches where participants assume that, for example, sharing is not limited to core purposes, so your contact information is always shared, but it's not really the case. And the last point I just mentioned about the deletion, I think is really concerning, that participants expect that that they can delete their information if they want to, but most websites don't have a straightforward process for that. In terms of limitations, we focused here on analyzing practices that are disclosed in privacy policies, and of course there are issues to that, right? That might not necessarily match what services actually do, and there's additional work to be done to actually analyze the behavior of websites or mobile apps or other kinds of devices, IoT devices, for example, to better understand what they actually do and how that matches up with their privacy policy as well as with the user's expectations or preferences. Then we conducted an online study to elicit expectations, and you know there are certain caveats for using online studies in this context. However, we argue that by focusing on these objective expectations, which we're not asking them about their privacy preferences or how they would behave, we're asking them, well, what do you think this website is doing? This is actually less of an issue in our study than in some other preference elicitation studies. And of course, there are many other practices and websites and website categories that might be of interest that we didn't look at here and that could be of interest for future work. Now, before I close, I would surely want to talk about how this could be leveraged to provide simplified notice. So let's look at our example from the beginning again, right? So we looked at 17 practices, and if we just would focus on practices that are mismatched either in either direction, we're already down to 11 practices. It's a reduction in a 30% reduction. Now, if we just focus on the practices that are unexpected, so something the website engages in and the users don't expect it, we're down to 5 practices where that is actually the case. And now we can, probably many of you can come up with ways how we can highlight 5 practices in a way that is more effective than showing users a whole privacy policy. Or at least having a layered notice where, you know, you see maybe these practices first, and then you go to the full privacy policy. So there's lots of opportunity of doing this. And actually, Josh Clark is going to talk tomorrow, present another paper from our group tomorrow, where we'll be doing some of this work. Okay, in conclusion, what we find really interesting, I think, is worth investigating further, is this distinction between privacy expectations and privacy preferences. And maybe by focusing more on privacy expectations, we can actually circumvent some of the uncertainty of privacy preferences. We propose a method for eliciting expectations and comparing this with stated or actual data practices. And what we find is that privacy expectations are affected by website type, privacy awareness, age, and experience with the website. And this suggests there's ample opportunity to actually contextualize and personalize notices by leveraging these factors. And probably each of these factors also should be investigated further in more detail. And by doing this, we believe that we can start highlighting unexpected practices and emphasizing these practices. So the goal here is not to get rid of a privacy policy. I think privacy policies have their meaning and their place. But if we want to inform users, these are the practices we need to focus on. And that's it. And I'm open for questions.
Thank you. It was a very nice talk. I'm Kavila from Newcastle University. I'm just wondering how much do you think the privacy expectations mismatch that you observe would help explain the privacy paradox?
Well, so the privacy paradox, at least to my understanding, says something slightly different, right? The privacy paradox says people tend to overstate their privacy preferences but then behave differently in reality. And I think that's different from the expectations of what a website actually does. So that's kind of like the additional part of the analysis we didn't do here in this work.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, Alain Forget, Google. Great presentation. You used the term objective expectations that you were collecting from users, but oftentimes when we ask users questions like that, we understand their opinions and beliefs to be subjective. So could you clarify about what you mean by objective expectations there?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we mean that in opposite to more subjective preferences, right? We're saying like people trying to think about, oh, so what does this website do? What does this service do? And you're right, that's not fully objective, but you know, it gives us an idea of what they think might be true, regardless of what their own personal hopes or preferences are, how this website should behave. So that's kind of the difference. I think talking about expectations and preferences makes it clearer, and let's scratch the objective.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks.
Hello. Bart from Clemson University. I actually wanted to go back to the previous question about the privacy paradox, because
sure.
I think there might actually be a connection here.
Okay.
Because what we see in the privacy paradox is people behaving in a certain way that might be based on their other expectations. So disclosure is one thing. And I might be disclosing something with the expectation that I can remove it or that they won't collect any other data about me.
Yep.
So it might be that still the fact that there's a mismatch of expectations about other things still creates that privacy paradox, in the sense that people say, yeah, I don't want them to collect my information, but then they give it with the expectation that they can take it back. So that was one thing. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you is, have you thought about actually contacting these companies for the things that are NA? Because I'm wondering if people's expectations are actually more or maybe less valid on those aspects than the aspects that are mentioned. Because I can imagine if I'm a company, I'm going to mention the things that might mismatch people's expectations, and maybe the ones that I don't mention match. But it would be interesting to see if that's true or if that's actually completely false, and we actually would... That would mean that we wanted to encourage the companies to actually mention all of these things, because the things that they don't mention actually mismatch expectations as well.
To the first point you made, I think it's really interesting. And I think what that suggests to me is we should probably try to tease out these different factors that go into privacy preferences a bit more. Actually, we try to distinguish between the expectation, the preferences, and there might be other factors that factor into that. Considering the second point, so we haven't contacted the companies to clarify this. And the reason why these things are often unclear is that there are hedging terms in the policies. So they say, we may collect this. Or they say, we collect information such as. And then they give you a couple of examples. And silence, on the other hand, it's legally a really tricky thing. So in California, for example, well, if you don't disclose it, unless you're required to disclose a specific practice in the policy, you should be silent about it, because otherwise you're liable for it if it's in the policy. You can still do it, right? So it's really crazy. It's a crazy legal situation right now.
Let's collaborate on the first one.
Yes, sounds good.
I apologize if this is a silly question.
There are no silly questions.
You stated at the end that there were five areas of mismatch, which I thought was a wonderful sort of thing to home in. What were they?
Yeah, you caught me on the left foot here. I would need to look it up.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's discuss offline.
If you could find somewhere where it's actually published or something, I'd be delighted.
I think I might have backup slides with this. So let's discuss offline. Thank you.